Okay, this is December 7th, 2012, in Mayapur, Nectar Devotion, Class 7. Well, if you're going to get confused, that's the way to get confused. Not know if you're in Vrindavan or in Mayapur.
Those are my different.
That's a good kind of confusion. Okay? I don't mind that kind of confusion. Why should we study the Nectar Devotion? It's what? The Nectar Devotion is what?
Ocean of transcendence.
It's an ocean, okay. It's an ocean of what? It's an ocean of nectar. What's the Sanskrit word for nectar?
Amrita.
Amrita. What does Amrita literally mean?
No death.
No death. So the Bhakti Rasa has no death. It's eternal. It's like the demigods drink nectar so they won't die. Of course they do die, but they live for a long time. And in comparison, material rasa is what?
Chapala Sukha.
Everybody.
Chapala Sukha.
Chapala Sukha. What does that mean? Sukha means?
Happiness.
Chapala means?
Invigorating.
And in contrast, Bhakti Rasa is?
Amrita.
You could think of it maybe like if one cup has a hole in it. So your Sukha all flows out of it. Oh, I've got Chapala Sukha. And in this one I have Amrita because the bottom of the cup opens to an
ocean.
Okay. And also the Bhakti Rasa gives you
satisfaction
without, whereas material rasa gives you
satisfaction.
And because you get satiated, what do you have to do? That's because you get satiated. If you didn't get satiated, you wouldn't have to tiago. Anybody want a tiago? Anybody want a tiago? No, everybody wants a disboga. Correct? You understand? You want to renounce or you want to be happy? Nobody wants to renounce. The word for tapa means austerity and it means suffering. Anybody want to renounce? No, we want to just be happy. So why materially is it boga tiaga? Why is it boga tiaga? Because you get
satiated.
And you have to get away from it. So why should we believe in this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? Why should we believe it's true? Because the Nectar Devotion is
authorized
by? And we are therefore called?
Which
means? And why else is it authorized?
Because
quoting evidence, which of chapter 4 is that we're going to do today, is nothing but evidence. That's all it is. Just evidence, 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 evidence. Okay, let's say it together 3 times. Anya bilasita shunya jnana karma yanavritam anukulena krishnanu shilanam bhakti. Try to keep your eyes closed.
Anya bilasita shunya jnana.
Okay, you in the orange, sorry. Please tell me what anukulena means.
Anukulena?
Yes.
Pleasure, like pleasure for Krishna, or
where is the, does that mean Krishna has to be pleased? Okay, anybody help her out?
Your intention.
Your intention is to please Krishna. Your motive is to please Krishna. Okay, and you with the computer in the green, sorry. Please tell me what jnana anavritam means.
Jnana
anavritam.
Jnana means like a yogi process which has to attain knowledge.
Okay.
And through that liberation. And then anavritam, that brings
Navrata means ah. Ah means not. So jnana anavrata means not covered. You're going to have to demonstrate to me what jnana anavratam and karma anavratam are today, so please make sure you know what that means. Okay, somebody tell me, let's see, you in the flower skirt, what does anyabhilasita sunyam mean? No, you do have a, sorry. The flower skirt there.
It means that we should be serving Krishna without any sense of personal desire.
Yes. Without any sense of... Can we have personal desires?
Yes.
Yes. In the beginning, that's expected. So what does this mean, exactly?
Shunyam is desirelessness, or like void, zero.
Shunyam is zero. Ita is the ness.
Okay. Desirelessness of what? I don't know.
That's pretty good. We're like 95%. Anybody can fill up the last 5%? Yes?
You can still have those desires, but you're not trying to serve Krishna to fulfill those desires.
Correct. That's not your reason for doing service. And we're really going to look at that today also. That's not your reason for doing service. Your reason for doing service is just to please Krishna, which word?
Anukulina.
Okay. And if you could please tell me, Anushilanam, what does that mean?
Anushilanam means actions, doing something with the mind, body, and speech. And body, when we speak of mind, it has a feeling, willingness, feeling, and thinking.
Thinking field doesn't matter, the order. And why Anushilanam?
Anushilanam, following the authority, following the
Acharya.
And it's all
who
actually
come and
please Krishna.
Yes, we have Anukulina and Anushilanam. Okay, and we put Anushilanam up on the wall so that you can refer to it. If it's up on the wall, figure it's important. Okay? Up on the wall means this is important, this is something you really need to know. Clear? Okay. Good. All right. And what else do we have up on the wall?
The root cause of suffering.
We have the cause of suffering. And here also we have, what's all this about? Someone tell me what this is all about. This lovely lady with the embroidered blue sweater or jumper, depending on what part of the world you're in. So what is all this stuff here? What is that? Hmm? Yes, you're right. Yes, characteristics of devotional service. Excellent. Who can tell me what kleshagni means? Our lovely oriental lady in the back with the black and the diamonds. What is kleshagni? Oh, can somebody help her out? Yes.
Some means miseries and agni means fire, so destroying the miseries.
The miseries are destroyed. Who here would like their miseries destroyed? Okay, so there you go. Some of you don't care. Okay. So destroying your miseries. And can someone explain to me why bhakti destroys your miseries and you've got it right up there on the wall? Yes.
Because it burns the very root of misery, that is avidya. And
yes.
Because of avidya, only the other misery happens. So the avidya is destroyed and we are properly situated.
Okay. Would I like all of you have a piece of paper? All of you have something to write on and something to write with? Okay? And I'm just going to treat you like grown-ups here, which you all are, yes? Without looking at the wall, write down the kleshagni cycle. Without looking at the wall. Don't look at the wall at all. Not even a moment. Write down the kleshagni cycle. Without looking in your notebooks, if that's what you have it written down. Okay, switch with your neighbor. Without looking at the wall still, switch with your neighbor. Do not look at the wall. Find some neighbor. Find somebody. Find someone who loves you. If you have three people, get three people together.
Really?
And switch. And write without looking at the wall. Without looking at the wall. Switch with your neighbor and fill in whatever was missing in your neighbors. Without looking at the wall. Without looking at the wall. Maybe I'll stand there, huh? Gyanis can obliterate up through Kucham. Karmis can eliminate up through Bijam. Yes, Karmis can eliminate up through Karma. You can eliminate through here, but it'll come back because you still have a Vijay in Kucham. Through Gyan, you can eliminate Kucham, but it'll come back because you still have a Vijay.
So you can eliminate the generalization to sin.
Excuse me?
So Gyan can eliminate this generalization to sin.
Yes, they certainly can. But because they don't establish themselves as Krishna's servant, there's still some, it's called in the Bhagavatam, Avasuddha Buddhaya. Buddhi means intelligence, Avasuddha, Suddha means pure. Avasuddha, they do not yet have a pure intelligence. So they have, we're talking about a perfected jnani. A perfected jnani who's Brahman realized, they don't have much of vidya. They realize they're a soul, but they don't realize what they do as a soul. It's not finished. It's kind of like I'm an employee in Krishna's company, but I don't know my job description. It's not enough. When I was doing an internship, the first day at my work, I didn't know what to do. I didn't have any job to do. I said, "What do I do?" They said, "I don't know. Do whatever you want. Whatever I'm supposed to do." It wasn't the kind of place you could sit and chant Hare Krishna. So, what were we supposed to do? So that's the problem with the jnani. They don't know what to do. Therefore, there's still some avidya. Okay, how many of you got? 2, 3, 4, 5. How many of you got one? At least one? How many of you got at least two? How many of you got at least 3, 4, 5? All right, let's just go over this quickly. So, kleshagni means?
Destroying
distress, which is explained there. Shubhada means? Auspiciousness. And why is it auspicious? The four reasons why it's auspicious. And why does it give you good qualities? Why does only bhakti give you good qualities?
Because you know your real identity.
You know your real identity. Therefore, you have full peace and full courage. These two are accomplished in what part of bhakti?
Sadhana.
Then two more are accomplished in?
Bhava.
And that's moksha, lagu, takrit, which means what?
Moksha means liberation.
Lagu, takrit. Your happiness is bigger than liberation. And Sudurlabha?
Very rare.
Very rare. Why is it rare?
Because Krishna
Because Krishna has to trust you. Because once you've achieved bhava, what do you start to be able to do? You start to be able to attract. It starts then. And also it's very rare because you can't get it without what?
Mercy.
Without mercy and inner attraction. You can't get it just mechanically. Please try to understand this point. Krishna consciousness is not mechanical. It's not like a little machine. Like we have a little machine here, and I push the button, and it does what it's supposed to do. And if it doesn't, I take it to the shop and say it's broken. Right? Krishna's not like that. You can't go to Krishna and say, Hare Krishna, okay, come right now. You don't come right now, my beads are broken. It's not like that. Krishna's not a machine. Are you a machine?
No.
So let's say you get a wonderful husband, and he reads a book, How to Make My Wife Happy. And the book says, make your wife happy by bringing her flowers. And he comes, he says, here's the flowers. Are you happy? Would you like that? No. Or if you give somebody your phone number, and they call you, and you're busy, you don't answer them. For some reason, you don't answer. And then later they see you, and they say, why didn't you answer the phone? You ever had anybody like that? Yeah? Nice, huh? I called you. Just because you give somebody your number and your email, does that mean you have to answer immediately? Sometimes I get that. You know, people email me, and if I don't answer them within 24 hours, they write back, did you get my email? Especially they write me this long letter, you know. 5 pages long. I'm leaving my husband because I'm in love with the brahmachari. And they, you know, no, it's really, really people write me things like that. I'm not making that up. And, you know, they go on, and please give me advice what to do. And if I don't answer in, you know, a few minutes, then they become angry with me. So we don't like that. Krishna doesn't like that. So you cannot obtain bhava just by rituals. Can't attain bhava just by rituals, and it attracts Krishna. Krishna gets control. Okay, last two are characteristics of what part of bhakti?
Prema.
Prema. And that's sandra ananda visheshatma, which means? Incomparable bliss. Ananda means bliss. Sandra means birthy bliss. Visheshatma, a universe of the soul. So it's concentrated burfi, and it fills a whole universe. A universe full of burfi, but remember, you don't get satiated. And it keeps expanding. Okay? And Sri Krishna Karshini. It attracts and controls Krishna. For getting in. Just like if you read about some university, Harvard or Cambridge, and if you go, you'll get a diploma and you'll get a good job and you'll get a lot of money. And what are these things we get by bhakti again? Oh, I can't remember what they are. Can someone tell me the 6 things we get by bhakti just quickly? Just tell me any of them. What? Tell me in English, Sanskrit, whatever you want. Faishadni, which means?
Destruction
of distress. What else? Tell me one. Not one? Oh, maybe you need to change where you're sitting. Okay. Sudulabha, which means?
Really attained.
What else? Which means?
More
happiness and liberation. What's about Sandra Nanda Visheshatma? What's your name there? The beautiful lady with the black sweater. What is your name?
Yashoda.
Yashoda, what is Sandra Nanda Visheshatma? Without looking anywhere. Without looking anywhere. That's Subhada. What's Ananda? Happy. happy, Sandrananda, would mean what kind of happiness? Very condensed, like what?
Burpee.
Like burpee. And how much of it do you have?
Unlimited.
Anybody want that? Yes. Okay, now I get to tell me one of the six. Beyond liberation. Good. Happiness beyond liberation. Excellent. Okay. So, anybody here, who here is interested at least a little bit in some of these? Anybody here interested? If you're not, you can leave the class, because if you're not interested, there's no use in staying for the rest of the day. So, what's the eligibility? You know, to go somewhere, to start something, you have to have some qualification. To come to this class, did you need some sort of qualification? Yeah, I'm going to move this tape back. Did you have to have any kind of qualification to come to this class?
Yeah.
What qualification did you have to have?
You wanted to be here.
First of all, you had to have 2 X chromosomes. Nobody got that, huh? So one qualification for this class was you had to have 2 X chromosomes. You understand? No?
Oh, yes.
None of you took science in school?
No, I understand what you said.
You had to be a girl.
You had to be a girl. Yeah, we don't have any guys in the room. We have a sign on the door, no guys allowed. So one eligibility for this class is you had to be female. Cool, huh? Any other eligibility for this class?
16 rounds.
You have to be human, right? That was a real issue in our Vrindavan class, by the way.
Monkeys
tried to get into the door. We sometimes would have to lock the door because the monkeys would try to get in. You know who else tried to get in besides monkeys?
Cows.
We would have cows and bulls and monkeys try to come to our class, and they were not allowed. So you have to be a human female. And what is another eligibility for this class?
You had to pay.
You had to pay something, okay. Something else? Some motive to come. Okay, any other eligibility for this class?
Recommendation.
You had to get a recommendation. You had to have at least one friend in the Krishna consciousness movement. Okay. So what's the qualification for taking up, for starting in Uttam Bhakti? So on page 19, it says, particular taste. And particularly Prabhupada is speaking about, Rupa Goswami is speaking about, that you need to have some background. In order to really take up Uttam Bhakti, you generally have to do something in Bhakti in a previous life. Now you can say, well, how does that work? Because it has to start somewhere. So it usually starts with what we call agyata sukriti. Kriti means action, su means good, nice, or very. And agyata means to know, agyata, not knowing. So something that you don't know. Someone gives, you know, you get a book, you hear the holy name, you get some prasadam. You do something that you don't know, and that starts you off. So therefore, the great devotees, they're constantly trying to engage everyone in some service so that can start their bhakti. You have to have some taste. You have to have some interest. So in this regard, my godbrother Arvinda Sarupabhu tells a story that one time Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Vishnujan Swami came to his temple with their traveling party. Sorry, I got to blow my nose. He was asking them, how do you know who's interested? How do you decide who to talk to? Because their system was, that Vishnu Janan Swami would lead a bhajan, beautiful singer. He had been a professional singer previously. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj would give a class. Then they would distribute prasadam. And then they'd go around and talk to people, sell them books. And Vinasrupu said, how do you decide who to talk to? And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, well, I go up to people and I say, do you like the music? Do you like the food? And if they said, yeah, it was okay, I'd leave them alone. And if they'd say, yeah, it was great, I'd talk to them. Yeah. So Vinasrupu decided to test this. So he went around and he asked some people, you know, you like the music, you like the food. And one young man said, it was okay. And Vinasrupu sat down for 1 hour and preached to him. And at the end, the boy said, yeah, that's nice, but I'm not really interested. I mean, I remember once talking to somebody who was, you know, saying, we're not this body, we're not this body. And I was really preaching to them. And at one point, the person said, well, just like when someone dies, the body's there, but the person's not there. I said, yes, see, we're not this body. And that person said, well, I don't believe that.
Oh my.
Isn't that interesting? So the main qualification is there has to be some taste. There has to be some taste. There has to be some attraction. Now bhakti, Uttam Bhakti has really, you can divide Uttam Bhakti up into many different stages in many different ways. Please do not think that this particular way of dividing up pure bhakti is the only way to do it. Just like if you're going to talk about human life, human development, you could talk about development emotionally, physiologically, socially, intellectually, correct? Yes?
Yeah.
It's going to be a little different. So there's many different ways of analyzing the process of bhakti. This is one. And Prabhupada points out that there are many subdivisions of each. If you want to think of, say, a drama, who's ever been in a drama or any kind of a performance? Okay, good. So before you get on stage, you have to practice, you have to rehearse. Now, is your rehearsal part of the performance or not? Yes and no. So your rehearsal is part of the performance and it's not part of the performance. It's both. You can say your performance starts when the curtains open and you're on the stage. You can also say your performance starts as soon as you start planning, as soon as you start rehearsing. Correct? As soon as you sign up. You could say it starts then. Please keep this in mind, because throughout Srila Prabhupada's books, throughout the scriptures, you will hear bhakti starts at this point. And sometimes it's referring to here, and sometimes it's referring to here. Whenever you read, bhakti starts when you're liberated, starting about here. And this can become very confusing. But please see, it really starts in both places. When children are playing with toys, is that just useless? No, what is it? It's part of what?
Learning.
Yeah, it's part of their learning and developing and preparing to be an adult. And it's an important part of preparing to be an adult. Yes? But you can say, well, you're not doing anything, you're just playing. But you are doing something. And you're doing something valuable. Or the little child who's just going ba ba ga 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 goo 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 goo. Are they talking? No. But if they don't do that, they're not going to talk. They're not going to go from silence to, you know, hello, how are you today? So the ba ba ga ga goo goo is part of learning how to talk. Or here Srila Prabhupada compares bhakti to what? Learning how to walk. So how many mothers do we have here? Actual biological mothers, not like we just call everybody mothers. How many biological mothers do we have in this classroom? Okay. How many older sisters do we have here? Anybody here older sister? Okay. Anybody here an auntie? Any aunties here? Okay. So I assume you've all then had some, or most of you have had some experience with someone learning how to walk. So when a baby learns how to walk, first, usually, they hold on to something, right? Yeah. And they fall and fall up. And they stand for 1 second, and then they fall down. Right? And they do that for a while. And then after a while, they stand up without holding on. Some children do that from the beginning. Or they stand up holding on, and they get up there. And they let go. And then they fall. Right. And then what do they do? You know, finally when they've held on and let go, or they stood up by themselves, then they just try to stay there for a couple seconds. Right? And then the next step is 1 step. Falling, right? Correct? All right. And how much of their focus are they giving to this whole thing? And all of their focus is going to this whole thing. How excited are they at this whole process? Very, very excited. And the parents are very excited, and the parents are calling up, you know, she took 1 step! Like that. Now, none of us do that anymore, I hope. Unless there's something wrong with us. We just walk. Right? We just walk. It's just natural that we walk. But that was part of the process of walking. That was part of the process of walking. So, if you're going to say, when does walking begin? Does it begin when the child first starts to crawl? Does it begin when they first stand up? Does it begin when they take 1 step? Does it begin when they're running away from you and you don't want them to get hit by a car? You know, at what point do you say the child is walking? So, this is difficult to say, right? In one case, you can say walking is when the child's really walking around the house. But another point you can say, well, maybe that first step, maybe when they take 1 step, you can say walking has begun. And what is the qualification for walking? Desire, isn't it? A child really has a desire. You can see that in the, can't you? Yeah? I remember when one of my children, he was the youngest in the group at that temple. And he would be crawling, and the other children would be walking, and he'd be, you know, he wanted to walk with them. So the qualification is desire to start sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti is practicing walking. Now, of course, Prabhupada makes the point that walking is inherent in the child. So when a baby's born, they do something called an Apgar score, where one of the things they do is they hold up the newborn, I mean really newborn, like 1 minute old, baby, and they see if the child moves its feet in a walking motion. It's one of the things they do to see if the child is normal. So that walking is there immediately, even though the child will not walk for another year or more. So this bhakti is already there. It's already there. We're actually going to kind of combine these chapters. I don't think I'm going to do them strictly just by chapter. Okay, then we're going to look at, well, what is sadhana bhakti? And any of you who have your, no, we're going to look at also qualification. We look at chapter 3 where qualification is also given. If any of you have this book here, some of you might have this book with you. If you do, you can open up to chapter 3, which is on page 99. Very interesting quote here. This really may surprise you. Right at the top of page 99, the quote book. Some of you might not have it. If you don't, maybe you have a neighbor. I'm going to read it out loud. But if you haven't, you want to follow, that's fine too. When one is not too attached to or detached from this material world, and by some good fortune develops faith in the service of Krishna's lotus feet, he is considered to possess the adhikar for devotional service. Adhikar means qualification. Interesting. Not too attached to and not too detached from. So Srila Prabhupada discusses this in the beginning of chapter 3. If you have a Nectar Devotion, probably on page 29. First paragraph of chapter 3. Excuse me? That quote was from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And it was the scriptural evidence Rupa Goswami gave was from Bhagavatam 11:28, which is, if somehow or other by good fortune one develops faith in hearing and chanting my glories, such a person, being neither very disgusted with nor attached to material life, should achieve perfection through the path of loving devotion to me. So that was Rupa Goswami's scriptural evidence. If we look on page 29, first paragraph of chapter 3, Srila Prabhupada is pretty much giving this again word for word. On account of his association with Mahatmas or great souls, 100% in the devotional service of the Lord, one may attain a little bit of attraction for Krishna. So this is the key: attraction, interest, taste. But at the same time, now here Prabhupada is giving the not too attached, not too detached. And please read this and really, really think about this. This is very, very, very astonishing and very important. But at the same time, one may remain very much attached to fruitive activities and material sense enjoyment and not be prepared to undergo the different types of renunciation. Wow! Prabhupada's not even saying not too attached or too detached. He's saying you might be very much attached and not detached at all. So Rupa Goswami says you can't be too attached or too detached. Krishna tells Buddha, you can't be too attached or too detached. Prabhupada says you can be attached. You can be very much attached. And you cannot be prepared to be renounced. I don't want to be renounced. I'm attached. But such a person, if he has what? Unflinching attraction to?
Krishna.
Okay. So now you're all going to learn by the end of this class, you're all going to know this Anya Bilasita definition of pure bhakti, right? Now those of you who got that down, if you haven't gotten that down, you can still work on that for the rest of the 8 days. But those of you who've gotten that, now please get this. You can start bhakti only with attraction to Krishna. And guess what? That's all bhakti really is. Ever. It really never is anything else. That's all it is. That's all you need. That's it. That's our natural state, is to be attracted to Krishna with love, like the natural state of a child is to walk. That's our natural state. And anything else is just meant to develop that. That is the process of bhakti yoga. That is it. Being attracted to Krishna, loving Krishna. That's all. Beginning, middle, end, up, down, back, forward, east, west, north, south, northeast, southwest, north. That's all. And so if a little bit of that is showing, just a little tiny bit of that, unflinching, I'm attracted to Krishna. That's enough. You can be an attached material. You can be a very much attached materialist. Very much attached. Not even just a little attached. You can be very attached. You can be not prepared to undergo any austerities. Wow! And you can begin, what, adulterated bhakti?
Pure
bhakti. You can begin the path of pure bhakti. You can say the path of pure bhakti begins then. Now, are you running? Are you running?
No.
What are you doing? You've done what? You've taken one step. Or maybe you just stood up, holding on to something. But is that a cause for celebration?
Yes.
Does the family celebrate when the baby takes one step?
Yes.
Nobody says, one step? What's that? I mean, maybe criminal parents or something. Drug addict parents.
Oh yeah, my baby took a step, big deal.
Nobody says that. Or talking. Yeah? Children don't immediately recite Shakespeare. They just say, oh, he said foot. And everybody gets excited. By the way, does anybody get really upset when the child learning how to work falls down and gets bruised? No. Does the child get very upset? No. Nobody gets, sometimes, briefly. Very briefly. Nobody gets really upset. Does the child get discouraged and give up?
No.
Some children have lots of bruises during that time. I've seen some children who were like, you know, they look like they've been in a fight. And they don't give up. We all did that. Every one of us in this room. And if you don't believe it, you can ask your parents if they're still living and you talk to them. We all did that. We had the determination to get up and keep going until we walked. I'm sure we fell down. I'm sure. Like many, many, many times. And I'm sure we had bruises. And I'm sure it wasn't the matter of 1 minute or 1 day. But as soon as we were standing up, especially as soon as we took that first step, we were walking. We had started the process of walking. So that's the eligibility for pure bhakti. You have some taste, you have some attraction. And you're not too attached, and you're not too detached. Even if you're very attached, and you're not detached at all. If you have any attraction for Krishna, that's a qualification. But too much detachment is also a disqualification. You'll be too detached from bhakti, too. Yes?
What is the cause of this attraction? I mean, if you when you talk about, I guess, greeting, can you say that this is a reason for this attraction?
What's the cause of that attraction? In one sense, yes, there's no cause for it at all. It just is. Why is a baby attracted to its mother? Mother loves the baby. Mother feeds the baby. The baby's part of the mother. Even people who have very bad mothers have some attraction for them. They do. I mean, like really, really bad mothers. Still, the children have some feelings of attraction because our body was formed from our mother's body. What's the cause? You can't really put a cause. It's like, are we attracted to ourselves? Yeah. When you walk past a mirror, do you just look straight ahead? Why are we attracted to ourselves? And I mean, you're all beautiful, but are we, you know, how attractive are we? But still, we're attracted to ourselves, right? If we hear our name, a big crowd of people and that kind of funny noise of everybody talking, but if someone says your name, or even you think they might have said your name, and you hear it, even though you can't make out any words, big crowd of people, that kind of, you know that sound?
Yeah.
Of 100 people talking at once? It's kind of a funny sound? And if someone says your name, or you even think they said you're attracted, why are you attracted to yourself? Krishna's the super self. He's the self of the self. Is there a reason that you're attracted to the self of the self? Now, you could say, okay, but why in this particular life are some people more attracted to Krishna than others? It's because some of the covering has been uncovered. Like iron is attracted to a magnet, but rusty iron isn't attracted. So the cause is some of the rust has been removed. And how does some of the rust get removed? It can get removed by circumstances. We do some unknowing service. Some great soul engages us in some unknowing service that removes a little bit of the rust. And then we find ourselves naturally attracted. Now, by the way, we have free will. Because we have free will, even in the presence of Krishna, we do not have to be attracted. And we'll get to that in a moment. We can choose to turn away from Krishna. We can choose to turn away from Krishna. We are not just like a piece of iron. We have free will. You can have in front of you some factory-made, 12-month-old, chemical-filled cake wrapped up in plastic. And right next to it, freshly baked, by your good friend, from all organically grown local ingredients cake. You've got two cakes, and you can pick the old one with all the chemicals in it, right? Do we have that ability to do that?
Yes.
Yes. And do some people do that? Yes. You can choose the fresh apple juice. Or you can choose the apple wine, the spoiled apple juice. Naturally, biologically, we're more attracted to fresh juice than to rotten juice. The smell of rotten juice repulses us by nature. But you can choose to drink rotten juice and get intoxicated by it. Is that correct? And do people make that choice?
Yes.
Now, what is the reason that some people follow nature and drink the fresh juice or the fresh cake, and other people go against nature and drink the wine or the chemical or eat the chemical cake? I don't know if you can really give an answer to that question. You know, we have free will, and free will is not just a rational, logical, put in a box, analyze it thing. You cannot put love in a box and analyze it. You can try, but you can't really. Why do you love? I don't know. You just do. Why do some of us choose to do that which makes us happy? Why do some of us choose to actually become attracted to he who is all attractive? And why do us some to choose to be attracted to the mirror? Ultimately, you really can't say. Ultimately, it's a decision of the soul. And you really can't say this is the reason for that decision and this is not the reason. Yes?
But it depends on our association.
But you choose your association also. So all those things are true. It's the mercy of the devotee. Without the mercy of the devotee, you don't even know you have the choice. So if you don't get some association with devotees, if you don't get some agyata sukriti, then you don't even know there is nice cake. The only cake you have is the chemical kind. Like there are some poor neighborhoods where the only food available is, you know, chemical. They don't even have fresh organic food available. They don't even know about it. There are parents who put liquor in their children's baby bottles. There are. You know, there are pregnant women who are taking drugs and the babies are born drug addicted. I mean, if you don't get some association with a pure devotee, you don't even have the opportunity to be attracted to Krishna. You don't even have the choice. Make sense? But still, you have a choice. So just association with devotees, just getting that mercy, just getting that agyata sukriti, doesn't guarantee. You still have to make a choice. And why do some of us make that choice and some of us don't make that choice? I don't think you can answer that question. I don't think that's an answerable question as far as logic. Free will is not entirely logical. So that's my very unsatisfying answer. But I just think that that's ultimately the answer. I have to, as a soul, feel some attraction. Why do I feel some attraction? And probably the answer is a little different for each person. When we talk about four people who become attracted, four categories of people become attracted, so that's at least four different reasons. And each individual probably has somewhat different reasons. Why they decide that I'm going to become attracted to Krishna, I'm going to become attracted to God, I'm going to look for something spiritual. I'm not just going to be a materialist anymore. But some mercy of a devotee has to be involved. There has to be some opportunity. If no opportunity is given, how will you even know to make the choice? Yes?
Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that we have to be pious to start our devotional service, like you said.
We'll get there.
Okay.
We'll get there. Okay, the last thing we're going to do before we take a break is, all right, so we talked about our basic eligibility. We'll talk more about varieties of eligibility after the break. But first is that basic eligibility is what?
Taste.
Attraction taste. Attraction taste. What is it?
Attraction.
Everybody, please. Attraction and taste. Thank you. Do you need anything else? Do you need anything else?
No.
No. You don't need anything else. You don't need anything else. That's enough. We will get into degrees and other things that we'll look at, but that's your basic thing. So that's how you start. Now we're going to look at the definition of sadhana bhakti. What is sadhana bhakti? When you start, what are you doing? And in your quote book on page 97, top of the page, and I really like this because here you can see the word for word. Page 97, top of the page. Let's read the translation. When transcendental devotional service by which love for Krishna is attained, is executed by the senses, it is called sadhana bhakti, or the regulative discharge of devotional service. Such devotion eternally exists within the heart of every living entity. The awakening of this eternal devotion is the potentiality of devotional service in practice. Now look at the word for word. You see nitya siddhasya. Siddha, anybody know what siddha means?
Perfection.
Nitya?
Eternal.
Asya means belonging to. So we're all eternally perfect beings. We're all eternally perfect beings. We're all eternally perfect beings. That perfection is already within us, just like the walking propensity is within the newborn baby. And here it's the potentiality of devotional service and practice. Sadhana bhakti has the potential to awaken that which is already there. It's not practice in the sense of practicing to be a gymnast. You all know what gymnastics is? Something like what the monkeys do naturally. So people want to do that, they have to practice. These Olympic gymnasts. Anybody, have you ever seen the Olympic gymnasts?
Yes.
They're good, aren't they? They're not as good as the monkeys. Sorry, I just came from Vrindavan, so. You can't help but admiring the agility of the monkeys in Vrindavan. They're a lot better. Mobile phone going off means you have to buy sweets for everybody. Go. So you can't help but admire the. I told you that, didn't I, on the first day?
Yes.
Yes, I did. I know I told you that.
Yes, we just asked that at lunch.
No. So the Olympic athletes, they have to practice to become 1/10 as good as those monkeys. But it's not natural. When people become an Olympic level gymnast, all kinds of funny things happen with their body. You know, they can get all kinds of fractures, bone fractures. And for the women, it messes up their hormonal balance. You know, you all know that?
No.
You didn't know that? Women athletes often become at least temporarily infertile. For a woman to be fertile, we have to have a certain fat-to-muscle ratio. And if you become a very accomplished athlete, you may skew the balance and get more muscle and fat that's normally allowed in the body. And then your fertility may at least temporarily stop. Interesting, isn't it? So, and they get all, there are all kinds of effects because it's not natural. It's not natural for human beings to be able to jump around like a monkey. If you want to jump around like a monkey, then you can become a monkey. So the they have to do a lot of practice, you know, to become an Olympic athlete. They really have to dedicate, probably much more dedicated than many of us are to our sadhana. You know, I mean, seriously. Those people who are in the Olympics, you know, they'll say they'll go for 2 or 3 years without ever going to the movies, without ever drinking coffee, and they're practicing 10 hours a day on their sport. They have basically no social life, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If they're very young, many of them move away from their families, and you know, they go through a lot of austerity. And they're working very, very hard to do something that's not natural, and that causes even often harm to their bodies. And as soon as they slack off in their practice, they lose everything. Because it's not natural, we're doing something artificial. So sadhana bhakti is not like that. It's not practicing to do something that's artificial and harmful, etc. It's a system to invoke what is already there. So I wanted you to see this translation, to see nitya siddhasya, that is already there. So that's our basic definition of sadhana bhakti. I'll see you again at 11:15. How do you go?